Good noon. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamal Thomas. It is 12 noon on Monday, June 8th on the East Coast of the United States, which means it's time for the Q&A show for Deprogram. A little bit of housekeeping for those of you who are now $50 a month sustaining members on YouTube or Rumble. Your exclusive YouTube show, hangout with me and Jamal, which may or may not be on YouTube, I'm not sure about this, will be the first Monday instead of the Q&A show of, sorry, the last Monday of every month instead of the regular Q&A show. So just mark that on your calendars. If that Monday falls on a national holiday, we'll do it on the Wednesday. So basically, and if I don't know if there's a national holiday that falls both on Monday and Wednesday, then I guess we'll do it the following week, but I don't think that ever happens. Anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. So for those of you who are new to this, the Q&A show is an Ask Us Anything show. You've got a question for Jamal, for Robbie, or myself, or two or three of us, all of us. It's just pipe it into the YouTube chat or the Rumble chat if you're watching live in the 12 noon hour here on Monday. And Robbie will give it to us, and we will answer it to the best of our abilities. Just so you know, the super chats on YouTube and the paid Rumble rants will get priority for the simple reason that we got to support the show, and the show is not going to keep going unless we get some more money coming in. So, with that, I'm trying to think if there is there any more housekeeping, Robbie, that we need to do?
Not that I can think of, just what I told you all about before the show went live, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, that is cool. All right. But that's our little secret. Okay. So, all right. So that's producer Robbie West. Again, if you're new to the Q&A, thanks everyone for tuning in. Let's go ahead and see if we have anything so far. I think we have one comment so far. Okay. Jack Samuels, thoughts on new alliances forming via proxy wars through Sudan, such as UAE, Ethiopia, Israel, and Somaliland, all for the use of a port and control of the seas, the Hexagon Alliance versus Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Somalia. JT, what do you think?
Yeah, Sudan has been a mess. Like, to put it mildly, like the rapid support forces versus the government itself and the chaos that's been erupted on the civilian population as a result. It's almost like two elephants going at each other, with the public just kind of being there as a as the victim in all of this. It's true that the alliances have effectively dumped money into one side or the other based upon what they're trying to get out of it. I mean, but I don't know what it ultimately means in the case, short of just misery for the population. I mean, the idea that, like, you have the military of a particular country, and then you have another military spring up, and that military is like, well, hey, maybe we should be the military for the country. Like, this stuff is outrageous, right? But again, we're looking at the similar proxy conflicts around the globe, whether it's in Ukraine, and you can make an argument, even the Israel conflict against Iran. Like, it just seems to be this is the new way of war, where countries don't necessarily want to engage directly, but they use proxies to accomplish their objectives. But in the grand scheme of it all, I don't know what it ultimately means, short of misery from the standpoint of the people who are living in Sudan. Not to mention, it was the goal in the beginning, if you remember. Sudan was one of the countries that was is supposed to be taken down on way to get to Iran, according to Wesley Clark. And if you think about it, each and every one of those countries have been taken down by hook or by crook, Sudan just being one of them. But I don't know a way to answer that question because I don't know entirely what it means to say one side or another wins in this kind of proxy.
Yeah, it's definitely too. I mean, I agree. It's definitely too early to tell. I mean, I think one of the things that's really important to understand about proxy wars is to, why are countries incentivized to participate in them? And the answer to that question is that for most of the proxy suppliers, it's a low risk, it's a low investment, high potential reward kind of thing, right? I mean, we've seen proxy wars around the world. I mean, almost any war you can think of, right? Vietnam was a proxy war. Korea was a proxy war. I mean, countries that we never think of. Tajikistan, was a four-way proxy war. Wait, did a war in Tajikistan? Yep, back in the 90s, nobody noticed. Millions of Tajiks died. In the end, they made a power-sharing agreement. Civil war over, thank God. But the point is that, you know, like, let's look at Tajikistan, right? There was China, Russia, and the U.S. were all involved. So it was Taliban, Afghanistan. Taliban, Afghanistan was no more for a while, so that went away. But, you know, okay, so that came to an end. The U.S., China, and Russia poured in a limited amount of money. They didn't really have boots on the ground. Losing didn't cost anything. Not winning didn't cost anything. And who knows? It's one of those things like, hey, it could have paid off big. They could have ended up, any one of them could have ended up, so, you know, controlling this entire country or having a huge say in it. So I think Sudan is literally just one more of those things. It's like, it's a civil war. Each party is reaching out and making promises to their sponsors or potential sponsors and saying, like, we'll remember you very fondly if and when we come to power in Khartoum, or maintain power in Khartoum, and we destroy our adversaries, depending on who you're talking to. And that's it. I mean, it's like, are you going to have a giant geostrategical realignment the way that, like, Ukraine has prompted that and led to the, you know, BRICS, thing? I don't think so. I don't think Sudan is going to have that effect, because what happened with Ukraine is that the West decided to box in Russia, and Russia was, it turned out, unboxable, and they ended up going out and making, you know, friends elsewhere, and finding that the U.S. had made enemies, or at least frenemies, or scared off a lot of potential friends all around the world. And it's like, oh, okay, so there's a possibility here for a dramatic realignment. I don't see Sudan. No one's boxed in. No proxy. You know, the Saudis aren't going to be boxed in as a result of this, for example. I mean,
right.
So I don't see where you get the realignment.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, like, I don't see a realignment in that case, if that makes sense. It's like proxy, yeah, realignment. I don't think Sudan is of that. I'm not trying to diminish Sudan, but I guess it kind of am. It doesn't factor that high on the list of things. Again, I'm not trying to diminish.
Everyone's okay with losing. It doesn't feel existential for anyone.
Yeah, especially for the U.S. I mean, your debt is nearly $40 trillion. So what if you drop $300 billion in Ukraine? If you win it, the gains. If you lose it, it's not real anyway, right?
Yep. So. Agreed. All right. So, Alfie, would you rip up party politics in the U.S. if you could?
Would I rip up?
Yeah.
I didn't hear the first part. It says, would we...
Would you rip apart party politics in the USA if you could?
Yes. Yeah, because it doesn't work. I mean, and to be fair, I don't know if it's the party politics part or the capitalist part, but something of it doesn't work right. Because it's, if you look at the outcomes that it's producing, meaning you have a political system. The political system, political systems are not appointed by God, right? They're basically developed to, at a basic minimum, protect and take care of the civilization and the society itself. And the society needs to be able to grow and flourish as a result of the political system. Otherwise, it's not viable. The outcomes of that political system matter. And how it works in earnest is the thing that is super important to the way that we govern ourselves, or let's say to the way that we operate. Because the fact of the matter is, if it's producing bad outcomes, then its ability to deal with environmental change also is diminished by the bad outcomes. And I think if you're looking at Biden, Trump, Bill Clinton, Obama, and even if you look below that and you go into congressional races, this is not an outcome that is ideal for surviving changing environmental circumstances. I think something's wrong with it. It needs to be ripped up. If that's that could be a capitalist thing, meaning you have a financial system that's over top of it, that is putting money into particular candidates, that is creating perturbations in a system that would otherwise work. That may be true. If that's true, then our problem is far deeper.
Yeah. Look, obviously, I would tear it apart. I hate both major political parties. I hate that. More than that, I hate the two-party system. I mean, this is a country with 330 million people. There's no two parties, no matter how awesome, that could possibly represent the interests of 330 million people. I'm not sure there's 10 parties that could do it. But as imperfect as they are, a multi-party parliamentary democracy is going to give Americans far more representation, I mean, sure, than they currently have. I mean, on a broad range of really huge issues, and I don't mean just cultural issues like abortion, but on big issues like war and peace, free trade, globalism, the American people don't get a vote. I mean,
they don't.
The American people don't want all these wars, but yet both major political parties do. And it, ironically, to support, like, you know, because of team politics, people end up supporting or pretending to support or at least tolerating these wars when their own party is waging them, even though they're against them, because they, you know, they hate the other party more because of the two-party trap. So, so the two-party system is worthless. And, you know, frankly, I think that there's some solid data to support that, which is namely countries with two-party systems tend to have far lower voter turnouts than multi-party democracies. 50-60% is kind of normal for a two-party system. 80-85% is normal for a multi-party democracy. So obviously, you know, any system that's literally one out of three voters decides just not to participate and sit on their hands is obviously not that great. I think both of these two parties are so corrupt that individually they both deserve to be banned for some of the shit that they've done. I mean, Democratic Party should be banned for the lawfare and for a lot of the COVID shit. Republican Party should be banned for Bush v. Gore and for invading Iraq by its alone. You know, I mean, I could come up with 1,000 other reasons, but just alone.
And by the way, they play one off against the other.
All
like, I mean, it comes across as if there's no other option in the system. They play one against the other. Meaning, why do I need to change as a political entity if I know you're going to come back to me after you get pissed off at them? This is a Nancy Pelosi made this point. It's like, they'll come back.
Yeah.
Because they have nowhere else to go.
Where else can they go? That's what they...
Exactly.
That's always their song.
Yeah. You have nowhere else to go.
It's not completely right, but it's not completely wrong either.
Yeah. Well, the Lawrence O'Donnell, when he made that point clear, in fact, I don't even know if Lawrence O'Donnell will say that today, where he made it very clear, basically, when he was making this argument, saying the reason that Democrats don't care about the left is because the left has nowhere else to go. And if the left wants to be able to show its teeth, it needs to not vote for Democrats. Now, I don't think Lawrence O'Donnell will say that today. It's true, right?
It is true. And it's demonstrably true.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, for people who doubt that, let's go back and look at 2016, right? So millions of Bernie voters who voted for Bernie in the Democratic primary they sat on their hands, they didn't vote at all in the general election. As a result, Hillary Clinton lost. That's quantifiable. So what happens in 2019, 2020, when the Democratic primary field starts to shape up? Suddenly, Bernie Sanders is incredibly important, not just as a candidate, but as an influence. Almost every candidate, including Joe Biden, endorsed all of Bernie's major platform planks, the $15 minimum wage, student loan forgiveness, Medicare for all, almost all, right? And like you looked at that primary field of like 19 candidates, they were all like, Bernie. So, I mean, that's a power that the Bernie wing, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, would have never had if not for the fact that Democrats that progressives withheld their votes in, you know, 4 years previous. In 2024, Democrats lined up behind Kamala to a lesser extent. But in 2020, they lined up behind Biden. By 2024, they had no clout at all. Withholding your power with your vote is the only power you have within the system.
Yeah, the power to destroy something is a power. As I kept saying, and people, like, I think people hated it, but it's true. The ability to destroy a thing is a power. I mean, I had the power to win, but be able to destroy something is a power in and of itself. You have to deal with me. You have to negotiate with me.
Yeah, it's not something you ignore me and say, where else are you going to go? Well, I'm going to go to the couch. Off to the sofa.
I'm going to the couch.
I watched places. There's a lot of good things on the sofa. Better than the voting booth. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Peruse, thanks very much for the question. A question to all. Robbie, too, if he wants to weigh in. Do you think Trump intends to leave after his term? To me, the ballroom suggests something else. Thanks.
Yeah, I think he's leaving after his term. I don't think an 80-some-year-old man is going to stay, but I know a lot of people think I'm wrong.
Well, there was Robert Mugabe. How old was he before
he left? God, he was like 1,000. He was like Father Time. I mean, like, he was like in his, 90s or something? Or some insane age? He was still, like, chasing women? Yeah. Chasing women. Yeah. I mean, but granted, that wasn't the guy who took power. Like, meaning, as a freedom fighter, he was a different animal compared to 50 years later.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, that happens a lot. I mean, God, I want to think that you're right. I think, it's not 100% either way. I don't know. True. But I think Trump is flirting with the idea. I mean, part of what makes me think that the odds of him wanting to stay in power as a dictator, as a Zelensky-type dictator, is going away a little bit because of the deal that he got for immunity from prosecution from the IRS. My whole theory here has been he's worried about going to prison and he can be prosecuted and he'll face those charges as soon as he comes back out. He'll be the lawfare stuff will come back up. But if he can't be busted for taxes, and he can't, although there's new offenses, because this deal only covers pre-existing ones, right? So there's all the grifts he's doing now. If he's not worried about prosecution, he'll retire. If he's worried about prosecution, he'll try to stay, I think.
They need to prosecute his ass. Like I felt this way about George Bush. Like, this idea of a president, because it's legitimizing grift on a massive effing level. Like, I mean, it's one thing to be a grifter, right? The Hunter Biden stuff is a really good example. The Joe Biden stuff where it's like they're enriching the family. That's bad enough. I thought Joe Biden should have been prosecuted for that stuff. But fair enough. It's grift in a... It's kind of like when Jared Kariyama... Oh, John is a good example of this. Where you had... what is his name? Giuliani. Giuliani was selling pardons. Did John ever tell you this story? He had to have told you this story. All right. Giuliani was selling pardons. And Giuliani...
I know what you're saying.
John's found out about this. And John's lawyer, effectively, they had a meeting. All of them are sitting at the table. And John, after a while, is like, okay, what about the pardon? Giuliani gets up and goes to the bathroom. And his lawyer says, you don't talk to him about that. You talk to me about that. Basically, it's their way of insulating themselves. So if it ever came up, Giuliani's like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. But behind the scenes, you're selling the excess. I'm saying the same thing was true with Joe Biden, where it's like this behind the scenes, low level, it's corruption. You're making money off of it, but you're smart enough in order to ensure that you don't necessarily get caught with your hand in the cookie jar. I'm saying Trump has gotten rid of all pretense. Like the stuff that he's on, like the crypto stuff, the defense contracts where they're like, oh, we're going to have a defense contract. Oh, hey, let me make sure my son gets in on that business deal. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing that all around the world. Like, it's so over, so over the top. It's astonishing. Like, it's so over the top that it's like he should be prosecuted for this. There's no way a president should be able to get away with this. Otherwise, what's the point?
Well, he should be, but he won't. And he'll leave. I mean, one way or the other, everyone leaves office eventually. Either you leave the dignified way or they wheel you out feet first on a bed. I mean, one way or the other, you're done. And I just don't think he's long for this world. I think that he's Well, he's old. Just to be honest.
He's what, 80? No,
I mean, he'll be 82 at the end of his term.
Yeah.
I mean, he's morbidly obese. He's clinically stupid. And there's only so much that you're able to get. You know, and at the end of the day, I think you're right, JT. I mean, so long as he's protected, more importantly, his kids are protected, he'll leave. He doesn't care. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll go, the beat will go on. I think there's enough.
It's kind of sad, though, because he's pregnant and he's going to miss his child growing up.
You mean,
he looks pregnant these days.
You mean ballroom? Do you mean the ballroom? I think he just wants a ballroom. I think for him, it's like, hey, why wouldn't we just have this ballroom? I think I don't know if it goes further than that. I don't think the argument of, well, he's making the ballroom, so he's obviously staying. I don't think that argument flies.
Yeah, I don't think the ballroom has anything to do with that. Yeah, I think it's more about fear of prosecution.
That could be it. I mean, they were trying to put him in a cage.
It would not surprise me if he has PTSD from the lawfare that he went through at the end of his first term. I mean, that's enough to break anybody. I really do think that the biggest reason why we see a difference between Trump 1 and Trump 2, one, he's old. Two, he owns the people who paid his legal bills own him. Third, he's terrified of being destroyed. And so I think those are the three driving factors. I really do think he has PTSD.
Yeah.
I truly do.
Yeah, I think that's true. All right, let's move on.
The people who said that the shooting was fake. Oh. Do you think the shooting was fake?
No. Come on. It's like,
Come on, Robbie. Get back in there, Robbie.
Which one? I mean, there have been so many. Which one are you talking about? The butler? No, I don't think that was fake. I think that was a guy who took a shot at the king and he missed. And
that's a hell of a miss, though.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
And by the way, Kelsey Grammer on Boss, the exact same thing happened and played out. Same thing happened.
Now, if you want to.
Hitler.
I'm not saying, just to be clear, I'm not making the argument that it's fake. That's not my argument.
Hitler almost get killed, right? I mean, he survived a bomb blast in a room that other people died in, right? He gave a speech where there was a bomb ticking in the column, in the wall behind him, and he uncharacteristically ended his long-winded speech early and dipped before the bomb actually did go off. There was the bomb that was on the plane with him. Right. That detonator failed because of an altitude pressure issue. I mean, it was one thing after another with that guy. People were always trying to off him, and it never worked.
Until it's your time to go, you're not going to go. I mean, you know, you have a set number of days, and that's just how that works out. But now, if you want to know what shooting I think is fake, it was the Charlie Kirk assassination. There's no way. There is no way.
The other one is.
Well, what do you think happened here? Do you think the Merry Widow had him taken out, had him capped?
I have no idea. But what I will tell you is that it was not a 30-06 that did Charlie Kirk in. There's ballistically, as someone who is an avid shooter and hunter, I will tell you right now that is
head off, right?
It would have disintegrated his neck, and the thing is, that wound that we saw, that was an exit wound. That's not an entry wound. And the other thing is, a 30-06, it's like right here. This is a 7.62 by 39. This little small round. This little guy right there. A 30-30 round is about yay long, give or take. It has a very long lead head. And if you're using a dum-dum, it would have just ripped the entire side of his neck off. That was an exit wound. That was a small caliber wound that did Charlie Kirk in. He was shot from behind. I guarantee you he was shot from behind. That's one of the reasons why to this day, a death certificate has not been released, and also a forensic report has not been released. You're never going to see it.
Well, it has to be when if there's a trial, if the kid
it won't be a trial,
unless the kid pleads out, which he probably will.
Well, the thing is, Ted. I mean, you have the right to a quick and a speedy trial to face your accuser.
Supposedly,
and here we are years later, and we're still sitting there. He's getting the same treatment as Luigi. There's not going to be a trial.
Did he burn that guy? he's been like just submerged in some kind of prison cell.
Right wingers, no guns. I'm telling you right now, Charlie Kirk was not done in by 30-06 by some dude 100 yards away.
All right. And all right. So here's another comment. Stormborn, I feel like ranked choice voting would be really helpful. I wish people, okay, please. All right. Let me explain my question. And then please explain to me why ranked choice voting is good. I mean, as far as I can tell, the only logic behind it is in a race where you're like, well, I like Bernie Sanders, but I worry that he can't win. So he would be my number two. He'd be my safety. He's my plan B. So I'll vote for him number two on my ranked choice ballot. And then I'll vote for the corporatist for number one. I mean, that's just an example, right? Right. And then like a lot of people do that. And then like somehow all those number twos, all those silver prizes add up to enough to push Bernie over the top or in a situation. Yeah, like, but look at what happened. But most of the time, elections aren't like that. Most of the time, people really only have at most one person in mind that they'd be willing to vote for. It's not like there's an abundance of riches in American electoral politics where you're like, oh my God, I'd be perfectly fine with either Pete Buttigieg or, you know, Beto O'Rourke or, you know, all so great. Like, I'll just rank them. I mean, it's not usually like that at all. And then my last point about ranked choice voting is Eric Adams. That's how we got Eric Adams. Okay, make the choice. Make the.
Eric Adams is a dagger. Anything I was about to say pretty much dies the moment that you say Eric Adams. No, what I was going to say is I think you're inverting it. I think the thought would be, I like Sanders, but I don't want to give it to Trump because I don't necessarily want to be in a situation where it's an either or. So I'll vote Sanders for one and Clinton for two. The thought being that if Sanders doesn't get it, at the very least, it's a backstop of Clinton. That's the way I think of ranked choice voting and the way that people were thinking of using it. Mm. And to be fair, from the standpoint of looking at it, like it's this esoteric other. Like it's, well, I like this candidate, but I don't know if other people will vote for this candidate. And so because other people won't vote for this candidate, I won't vote for this candidate and I'll put the regular cretin in office. Whereas if you have ranked choice voting, you could say, well, yeah, I'm voting my conscience first. And I'm voting maybe quote unquote practical for the second. And the idea being that if you get enough people voting their conscience first, then you actually get a candidate that you may want that you otherwise wouldn't vote for because you don't believe other people would vote for him. Meaning it pads it. It gets rid of this idea of it's either this particular candidate or whatever creature is on the other side. It gives you a better or more options. Or it gets rid of the esoteric other in regards to the argument against voting for a particular candidate that you may want. Now, to be fair, I don't know who else was in that race with Eric Adams.
Oh, there were some very good choices, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. Like, but if you had a good choice, you may be more inclined to vote that good choice as opposed to voting the bad choice because you don't believe anybody else will vote for the good choice. That's the way I think of ranked choice voting. Am I wrong in the way that it's used?
I have two responses to that. First of all, is like I would think that if I were concerned at all about strategic voting and like trying to second guess what my fellow citizens are going to want to do, I would probably be voting the more conservative route, voting for the, you know, the corporatist first, and then like my preferred choice second. But I also wonder if maybe there's so many people who think about it differently that maybe they all cancel each other out. There's the people like you. There's the people like the theoretical person I'm thinking of. And I also think it's just confusing, especially the way that the votes are calculated. I mean, right? Like basically it's like at each point they recalculate, they eliminate a candidate. They recalculate, they eliminate a candidate. I mean, it's like fucking Keno. Who fucking understands it, right? Yeah. I mean,
it is complicated. I agree. Yeah. But
Americans basically, you know, I mean, nothing happened with Iran-Contra because no one understood it. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but agree. But there has to be a way to make voting representative of the population. Because look, I mean, because like the person who asked that question in the very beginning, do you rip up the two-party system? And I guess, I think from my point of view, whether you, even if you have four parties, if all of them are corrupt, what's the point? Like, meaning if you have a situation where it's like, okay, well, they need to spread 100 million across four candidates as opposed to two. Sure, those people are getting less money, but those people are still being paid off. Like, and I guess it goes to the ranked choice voting thing, where it's like, okay, well, is there a way of creating a political system that actually makes sense and is representative of what the public wants? And if so, how do you tally a vote total with those people in a way that, again, at the very least, doesn't make voting a burden? Because the fact of the matter is, if I got to go vote and it's Clinton and Sanders, people say to themselves, who is viable? And who is viable in the context? And they tend to make a more conservative choice, up to the point of conservative choice. And I don't mean that in the context of Republican, Democrat. I mean, conservative, even in the context of a Democratic race. There has to be a better way to do that. And I don't know another way to do that without, there has to be a better way.
All right, well, let's see here. Thank you very much, Frank Friel, for the $5 donation. I saw that Iran retaliated for the Beirut attack. I haven't heard how extensive the attack was. Did Iran keep its promise?
They didn't turn the North to glass, but they definitely launched missile barrages against, I think there were multiple targets in Israel that they went after, particularly the refineries. But obviously,
we'll never really know the truth because the Israelis and their media censor any news of
Israel. There are pictures, but the pictures aren't extensive. And, you know, it's like we didn't see the damage till after the 12-day war. Mm-hmm. And so there'll probably be satellite images and those type of things. But Iran doesn't. It's not like the Russians where they put like cameras on the missiles so you can see what blows up. Theirs is a bit different. But yeah, they did retaliate.
Nathaniel, Ted, did you just spill your coffee? No. I've done that before. Not today. Maybe Blue Skunk? U.S. is too large, too diverse to unify. That's a concern.
That's not really true, though. I mean, think like the very concept of America is a unifying thing. And okay, I'm wrong. In the old days, that wasn't true. It may be true today. I mean, the reason why I said the old days, I mean, if you had a common news source, if you had a common political source, if people trusted their government, then you could unify.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because when we started out in the Republic, all the news sources were siloed, very siloed. And then we got, you know, when you and I were little kids, we had a more unified news environment. And that had been the case for probably 50 or 75 years. And then now we're back to where we were in 1805. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, and it's very divisive. So I don't know. I mean,
by the way, also credibility, like trust, all of these things factor into it. Also, do you believe your government is lying? Yeah or nay? Do you trust the politicians? Yeah or nay? Do you trust your media? Yeah or nay? If the answer to those questions are no, then you're going to have a hell of a fractured society.
Yeah. Yeah, not to mention you're living, like we've talked about before and we'll talk about again, but you're living in completely different realities, right? I mean, like, it's really interesting. I read, you know, I'm on Truth Social. I'm on X, which has become basically a giant right-wing social media site. And, like, you know, when you see the things that people, like, attack liberals or Democrats about, like right-wingers do, they'll say, like, oh, Democrats are really upset about Trump's reflecting pool. Democrats don't give a shit about the reflecting pool, okay? No one does. And it's sort of like, but they've worked themselves. And so it's like, man, you guys are like, you're talking past each other. And I can make the same exact statement about shit that, you know, that the Democrats say about Republicans. Like, right. Oh, like Republicans don't care that, you know, they think they don't care that Trump is rude and crude and socially unacceptable. I'm like, actually, they do care. They like him despite that, right? Usually, and so it's like you're not even in a position where you can insult or argue with each other. You're just living in completely different ecosystems.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's wild about this. So tomorrow, David Grush is going to call for UFO transparency. And he's going to be at the Capitol as he does this. I thought about going, but I decided to get this going. If this took place in the 50s, with all of the videos and everything else being released, do you think they would have believed the government on this? Like, I'm fascinated by this dynamic. Like, the reality of it is, the U.S. government has been putting out videos left and right. You've had whistleblowers come out saying, yes, I was in the government. I did so-and-so. I was flying airplanes. I was watching this thing. Meaning they're coming out with this, the DNI report, effectively saying, yes, these things are real. They're mechanical. We don't know what they are, et cetera. You have pilots left and right saying, my plane nearly hit one of these things. If this took place in the 50s, does the public believe it? As opposed to now?
Yeah, I kind of think so. Yeah.
But that's kind of, I guess this is kind of the point that we're making, right? With this idea of this fracturing where the public looks at it and says, that's interesting.
But it's not the fracturing, it's also the fracturing of reality itself outside of the political system where, you know, look, you and I both know now if you see, like, you know, I went viral yesterday on X about something. And then several people created little videos of me talking. It's not me. I'm not saying anything. It's not really me. It's a deep fake.
And are you serious?
And like, you know, I mean, you know, and I'm a nobody. If they're doing that to me, imagine how much they're doing that to, you know, a governor or a president, right? So the point is, like, if you see something on, you know, on video, your first question has to be, is that real? I have to check that out and see if it's real. And so what's interesting is your response to it, first of all, you may never come back to it. You may never ever decide you, or if you do come back to it, your emotional response to whatever it is, even if it turns out to be true, is going to be reduced because of the passage of time. In, you know, that gap between your, the, you know, you first observed it, but then, so basically what do you do when you live in a world where everything you see that comes over your feed may be fake? Well, you have to basically turn it. It's like being an abused child. You basically turn everything off. You just stop having an emotional response because it doesn't make sense to have any emotional responses to things given that many of these things are fake, right? So you right. stop having emotional responses to everything, including things that otherwise previously you would have had an emotional response to. In other words, if 9/11 happened now and you saw the build, if you got that video coming over your phone of the first plane hitting the first tower, or I should say the second plane hitting the second tower, because that was the first thing we saw, your first response now would not be like, holy shit. Your first response is like, did that happen? Let me check that out. Right? And that's different, right?
Yeah, that's not something people had to deal with in the 70s. Not in this way. Internet could lie, but putting together, I mean, there's something disturbing about this kind of breakdown of the real, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Like, if you think of it today, somebody can make a video about some event somewhere in the world and claim this actually happened, especially if it's government, right? The U.S. government could do that and say, we believe this actually happened. The video could be a complete fake. And the public would just be, like, the media would engage it as if it was a real thing, not knowing the difference, because maybe the video is indistinguishable from reality, which is where it's going. Like, that's terrifying.
Basically, we're just not going to react to anything going forward. We're not going to have any feelings for anything. Logically, you shouldn't.
That's not conducive to reality. I mean, that's not conducive to having a sustainable environment.
Well, it's not conducive to having a real politics, right? Because what that means is you can now commit genocide or say something that's racist, but because nobody knows if you really said it or really committed it, nobody's really that mad. And if they decide to get mad at you later, it's not the same as if they were mad at you at the time. So you get away with more bullshit.
True, but politics is an overlay of real life. And it's the real life part that freaks me out. Like, meaning I need to be able to identify a bear is about to eat me for me to get out of Dodge, right? And if I'm sitting there questioning, is that really a bear?
Right.
I'm gonna die. And I'm saying society needs to be able to deal with environmental circumstances, whatever those are, whether it's war, whether it's a meteor shower, whether it's alien invasion, whatever, add whatever you want to add to it. But it needs to be able to respond to real world phenomena. Otherwise, the entire premise of a government fails.
Well, I think part of what's going on with the, you know, the UFO stuff is that not everyone's really sure that it's real, even though it was released by the government, and not just because government lies, but because everything that comes out of the news space feels unreal.
Yes, agree. And it's so big. It's just so big. So,
more comments. Teg Derb Namrog, thank you very much for the $2. President Trump knows he's old. He cares about his image and legacy. That's why he wants his name on everything. He also cares about his family's wealth, but that's obvious. Yeah. Agreed on all.
Why do people care about legacy when they're going to die anyway?
It's the closest thing that they have to immortality, right?
Yeah, but it's not real immortality.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, there is no real immortality. The fact is it's ashes to ashes, dust to dust, right? I mean, that's reality. Let's see, maybe Bluth Funk. I was watching a lot of Charlie Kirk back then, and he came back from some meeting with Trump, and he straight up told his audience, hey, guys, we need to stop talking about Epstein.
I'm not shocked. That doesn't shock me. That doesn't shock me in the least. All right, because Trump's thing was, why are people still talking about Epstein? I was like, are you serious? And well, and honestly, we, you know, let's talk about reality and let's talk about like how it damages the credibility. And the moment that credibility is damaged, it's hard to get any kind of notion of truth and those type of things. Our government, in full view of the public, defended pedophiles. They still are.
Yeah, they are.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is it just me, or that's Madeline?
But this whole thing, like, okay, I got to tell you what makes my fucking teeth itch, to quote Scott Stantis, one of his favorite sentences, is this idea that, like, because, quote unquote, your side is disadvantaged by some kind of very important news issue, that you should just not talk about it. Like, it's like being a Democrat and, you know, For the last 5 years, we were, you know, they were told, yeah, don't say anything about Biden, you know, about the way he looks, the way he talks, the way he walks. Just like, no, because otherwise, if you talk about that, you're giving credence to the Republicans, and that's going to lead to Trump coming back. Don't do that. Don't do it. Obviously, as we saw where we are now, that doesn't work. But it's also like, why the fuck? I don't want to be part of any political movement where you've got the elephant in the room and you're told that part of your strategy is you don't fucking talk about the elephant in the room. Like, you know, the elephant, it's like any politics I'm a part of, you should, you know, I want to be able to say like, now this is going on and this may be bad for us, but we've got to talk about it. You know?
Right. Bring it up. You have the conversation. Like meaning, put it this way, I there are things that I want politically in the world in regards to foreign policy. Mm-hmm. If the Russians are losing ground, I would just say, hey, this is bad. They're losing ground. I don't need to hide it. That's not my job.
Right.
The Epstein files goes, I think the thing that bugs me the most about it is that they were looking at this entirely through a political lens. This is not a political lens issue. This is, do you protect pedophiles or don't you? Yay or nay? And you get a large number of people saying, yes, we need to do that. And then you get people on the other side who, mind you, had the capability of outing the files at any moment because they had control of the political space, didn't do it. Who are now like, yeah, we should release the information. You could have released it before. Like, it annoys the hell out of me that this stuff is put through this political lens when the reality of it is they are pedophiles who are raping people who the political space is protecting because they are very rich. Why is that okay?
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like a conversation that Democrats are having about Plattner right now. That's not as extreme because what Plattner is accused of is not as extreme, obviously.
Right.
And it's kind of like, well, do we stick with our dude or do we throw him under the bus? Because, you know, but I mean, at least have the conversation, right? I mean, have it in public. I think to their credit, they're having they're kind of having that conversation now. It's better than nothing, sort of. Stormborn, thanks for the dollar. Any concerns with a foreign terror attack at the World Cup in the U.S.? I would argue that the terrorism is coming from inside the house in the form of inflated seat prices. I mean, there's the typical generic seat at some of these games is $2,000 or $3,000, not even for box seats.
Yeah, I'm shocked anybody's coming. My ex was like, yeah, I'm never coming to the U.S. because I don't want to be put in a cage. She's fucking Austrian. Like,
they put some German lady in a cage. Remember that?
Yeah, but that's my point, right? Like, if you're looking at America, it doesn't look like a safe haven to travel to.
No. You know it's going to be a pain in the ass. You know that you're going to be like, you know, you're going to have your, you know, proctology exam at the airport. You could like have an unfortunate encounter with ICE or some fucking crazy ass cops. And then like you come for the World Cup and, you know, everything's overpriced. And I mean, you know, $150 fucking train ticket that used to be $7. You know, it's a shit show. But to answer the question, you know, I think people always anticipate. It's like a 1970s novel, right? Like the one where the terrorist Goodyear blimp hits the football game. I forget what that's called. It's like it's like everyone kind of thinks. My ex-wife used to have this statement, and I liked it. She used to say, when you least expect it, when you don't, and when you do expect it, it ain't going to happen. And right. It's like, that's what it's like. It's like, of course, you know, they're preparing for that. But like, you know, when terrorism comes to America, it's going to come on a generic sunny Tuesday in September. You know, it's not going to be for like the big event. It's not going to be for the cage match at the White House, for example.
Yeah. And because, I mean, but oxymoron of sorts. The time do you expect it is the time where it happens.
Well, and not to mention, like, terrorism is asymmetric warfare, right? So you choose a soft target on the softest possible day and time, right?
Obviously, World Cup is not a soft target.
No. I mean, it's soft-ish. It's not a military installation. But, I mean, the place is going to be, you know, crawling with cops and state troopers and, you know, FBI and ATF, all those guys. We've had enough. In the earlier show, when discussing whether or not Israel would possibly nuke the U.S., I would like to remind Ted about Jonathan Pollard's Jerusalem Post interview where he brought up that. Of course, Jonathan Pollard is a treasonous little shit whose word probably can't be much trusted in any way, shape, or form. But
I think they're bringing up a false flag is the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but we're already at war. It's not like we're not at war with Iran already.
Maybe Bluth Funk, another one. This is Ted. This is a while ago. And Jim and I said this, that France happened because if you storm Paris or Versailles, you're getting the capital. But there's no centralized power in America. Yeah, we talked about that here. Yeah, yeah. You can take over Washington D.C., but you don't own the country. Right. You can take over Washington and the media/finance capital of New York. You still don't own the country. You know, it's really decentralized here.
Yeah.
We've had enough of the 1973 Arab-Israeli war. Israel threatened the U.S. with unconventional weapons if they didn't keep supplying arms. I'd need to see that. I'm not saying it's not true, but anyone
knows? Well, if that was true. I mean, the attack on the USS Liberty, obviously, is an issue. But threatening, I mean, they did, I mean, depending upon who you're talking to, Wilkerson made the point of saying that Israel threatened Iran with nukes if the U.S. didn't get involved militarily. It's like that type of blackmail and stuff like that. And yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put it past them for some kind of false flag. But I guess my thing is we're already at war. Like, what would be the need to, I suppose, maybe to escalate the war of sorts? But from my point of view, we're already at war.
Let's see. Thoughts on Jack Samuels, 3480. Thoughts on France pulling all of its gold out of U.S. reserves due to a lack of stability, about $15 billion worth. Well, that's part of it, right? I mean, they also made a profit.
So be France. Yeah.
That was so, I mean, I think it was a two-part thing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, keep in mind, gold has gone all the way up to like nearly $5,000, like just obscenely expensive. But keep in mind,
$35 an ounce when I was when I was 10 years old.
That's all. And it's now at $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Should have bought it with my paper route money.
But see, this is kind of gets into this whole thing of the U.S. controlling X amount of regards to gold, whether or not people would be able to get that gold back. And, you know, China's at this point been hoarding gold themselves. I guess my thing is this indicative of something? Are these guys responding to something? I mean, we're not on the gold standard. I'm not sure if any of these European capitals are on the gold standard. In fact, I'm pretty sure they're not all of them are fiat. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're seeing something coming down the road or something, and they're preparing.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, I mean, it might just be, why are we leaving it there? Maybe it's also like France is feeling more stable than they used to. I mean, they used to have the Germans invading every 40 years. Now it's like they're in bed with the Germans. They're not so worried. It's like, might be that. Macron just wants the gold closer to home so that when France falls, he can like grab the gold and into the bullion, throw it into a gym bag and take off from the roof of the Elysee Palace. Who knows?
Yeah, and I got to be honest, if I'm a country, I'm sovereign, why wouldn't I want my gold?
No, it's like, yeah. I mean, France is a real country. I know Robbie would disagree with that. Maybe Bluth Funk. Hey, thanks so much for the $5. Hey, guys, just love the show. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for watching. Let's see. I think there might have been an ad. I think I saw. Yeah, there it is. I'm gonna skip this ad. Like
is that really it? It was like,
oh, it's so cheap. You know, sometimes they're like offering like ridiculously low sums, and you're like, fuck that. Like, any more comments?
I know, God, man, it's really ad that was offering what, like $300, 10 people viewing, and it's like, what?
That'd be good. That'd be amazing. What? Yeah, it's like, oh, Israel's awesome. Love genocide.
I've had some people ask if I could show the difference in bullets between what they're saying Charlie Kirk was shot. So if you want, I can do that.
Is that a YouTube?
No, because I'm not because I'm not showing guns. So no, this is just
you're not showing guns. Okay.
Yeah, no, these are paperweights. These are non-operative rounds. So for for my YouTube censors out there, for our YouTube community managers, these are paperweights. That there's no gunpowder in these rounds. They just look like real bullets, but really they just hold down paper. That's all that they do. Okay, so this is 7.62 by 39. This is intermediate. This is what an AK-47 uses. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a 30-30 round. This is what every deer hunter in America uses. Mm-hmm. This is the equivalent of a 30-06. This is what Charlie Kirk was shot with. So that's a 7.62 by 39R.
Are you serious?
But
it's like a little micro missile.
Yeah. Basically, so they're saying that this guy right here hit him in the neck and then could not penetrate his neck. Let me tell you right now, not with this, because this is, again, YouTube, this is a paperweight. I have used working rounds of these to cut down pine trees.
But okay,
body cannot stop this.
Let me ask a question. I mean, yeah. Is it possible? Could it have gone by and kind of grazed him and done and had that effect?
It would have ripped the entire side of his neck off.
Even if it just hits like just barely.
Like skin them, like in the way that the bullet skin Trump's ear.
Yeah.
You're trying to say it could have skinned him in that way.
It would have filleted him. And also with a round like that, you're not going to shoot at the head. You're going to shoot the chest because you're going to blow the entire back out.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. So why was Trump able to get away with just a skinned ear? But there's no way possible that that could have hit Charlie Kirk in a way that skinned him without
Because you're saying that the bullet fragmented inside of his body, and that because his body was just an abnormally strong body because he's so tall and so muscular that the bullet itself fragmented, and that the bones in his neck would have prevented it. As someone who grew up with guns in the Deep South,
that's not.
I am telling you, if I was to go buffalo hunting, I would use that round right there. Jeez. That is what the American buffalo was hunted nearly to extinction with. Human neck cannot stop that. It is a lie.
That size. I mean, is that odd?
How do you explain, Robbie, that, okay, let's just stipulate for the sake of argument, you're 100% right. What is the purpose? Like, why would they lie about something that millions and millions of Americans would know is not true because they have experience with guns?
Well, let's just assume that first of all, the government does not care that they know that the people know that we're lying to them, because we know they're lying to us about Epstein. They don't care that we know that we're lying. I think that what the issue is that they're trying to chill political speech on the right and the left and the center. It wasn't to shut him up. It was to get people to shut up, not him specifically. And that's what you're seeing. No, you're not seeing, you know, the man on the street interviews anymore. You're not seeing people left, right, or center going to college campuses. You're not seeing people engaging in debate. You're not seeing people having these rallies. The goal, in my opinion, was to create a chilling effect around political speech. And that's exactly what it has done.
So maybe the lie is not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, if I had to hazard a guess, and again, YouTube, this is a guess. I'm not advocating any kind of violence. It was either a small caliber round from the back, or a military that has had experience with small package explosives packed into pagers or something, had something on a lapel.
Motivation? Who would have wanted to do this?
Israel.
Really?
And why? Because when they were really going hard on him to cancel Tucker Carlson from the last TPUSA events that he was on. True. Tucker actually offered to bow out because of all the heat that he was taking, and Charlie Kirk said, "No, I want you to speak." And he lost a lot of high-end donors because of it. Can I prove anything of what I just now said? Absolutely not. Is it a conspiracy theory? I have no idea. But you know, if it quacks like a duck, if it wobbles like a duck, if it swims, if it catches fish, odds are it's a duck.
Well, by definition, it wouldn't be a conspiracy. It would be just an alternate explanation, right? Because a conspiracy implies that lots of different multiple parties are involved. They all know and they're all in on it.
Yep. But one thing I can tell you is it was not a 30-06 that hit that man in the neck. It was something else.
Okay. Thanks too much for the Maybe Blues Funk for the $2. Robbie, you forgot the coroner said that Charlie Kirk's neck was blessed by a miracle, though. Is that true? No, that's not true.
Well, that's what they were saying, is that he was so physically fit and so strong that the bullet was not able, like it could not penetrate his neck bone. Like his neck bone shattered the bullet.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah, that's absurd.
There is no way... Like you could shoot someone in the hip with this, it would blow their hip out.
That puts you in mind of the magic bullet.
And by the way, working out doesn't make your bones that stronger.
No, it is insane.
Well,
it's just like the Epstein things. If you want the conspiracy theory to go away, just tell the truth. Just release the reports. That's all you got to do. Everyone will shut up.
Does make your bones stronger because it's weight bearing. It's the amount of your bones
but not that much.
Wait, but not that strong. Like, I mean, I guess I'm saying two things. One, Robbie, the bullet is obviously not going to, if that thing is used to hunt buffaloes, it's a human body, it's not going to accommodate it.
JT, like, I've used those to cut down trees because I didn't want to chop them using an axe. I kid you not. It blows the back out of a pine tree. They literally fall over.
And the coroner's response that he had like magical abilities seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, talk about designer babies. Have a talk about on TMI. You just make this bulletproof human that's only like 70% bulletproof. It just doesn't work, man. It doesn't work.
Not bulletproof enough.
No.
Magic bullet theory. That's the thing, right?
One of my favorite names for a man.
And then it's the other guy. And it's like, whoa, how did that work? It was just a magical bullet.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I think that's it for today. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Deprogram is back tomorrow, Tuesday, June 9th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We're here Monday through Friday. And we'll be doing, we may be doing another Q&A show probably on Wednesday at 12 noon. So anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m. See you guys then. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you later. Bye.
Have a good one, guys.